Well, that's the way it is. 1,000 questions on your mind, yet you can't think of anything to ask. But it will crystallize. It will crystallize. Maybe there's something you'd like to ask me.
No, no, I can't think of anything, Colonel.
Oh. So they call me Concentration Camp Earhart.
Yes, yes.
Well, well. Excuse me a minute. I'll be right back. I'm running out of dialogue. We got it.
Here, take this gun. Put it in your pocket.
No, you take him back to the hotel.
All right.
As soon as you're in his room, you hit him over the head with the butt of the gun.
All right.
Then you take his keys, open his trunk, and burn the papers. And then you shoot him.
All right.
Just a minute. What'll happen to me? They'll kill me. Well, we're going to keep our fingers crossed.
Good.
Hey, wait a minute. You go to the hotel and I'll cross my fingers. Here, think of something else. So they really call me Concentration Camp Earhart.
Colonel, unless there's something urgent, I'd like to relax a little.
Relax? Oh, Mrs. Tura. Tell me, how is Mrs. Tura? Sit down, Professor. You see, my Gestapo men are very, very efficient.
Well, I simply thought she might be of some value to us as an agent. And besides that, she's very good company.
Oh, very good company.
Mm. You know, Colonel, if you'd like to meet Mrs. Tura, I'd be only too glad to introduce you.
Well, thank you.
And if you should happen to take a liking to the lady,
maybe you'll even put in a good word for me, eh?
Why, I'd be delighted.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Tell me, hasn't she a husband?
Oh, yes, but what does it matter?
Yes, what does it? By the way, I believe her husband is that great, great Polish actor, Joseph Tura. Of course, you've heard of him.
No, I haven't.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, I never even heard of Maria Tura before, either.
Oh, you didn't? Well, then, how did you happen to get in touch with her?
Well, it's rather a delicate story. You see, there's a young Polish flyer in England. I think his name is...
So, Han, welcome, everyone. We're back for our final episode of the Ernst Lubitsch marathon that we've been going on with. And we're here with his 1942 outing, To Be or Not to Be, starring Carol Lombard and Jack Benny in a wartime comedy about Poland and spies and theater troops. Douglas, you sit here being the only person who actually hadn't seen this movie, even though Damien told me at the beginning of this that he hadn't seen any of Lubitsch's films, but he seemed to have made a mistake with that.
Yes.
But you were the one who hadn't seen this one going in. You've now seen 5 of his movies, including this. Where does this fall for you in the rankings of the 5 you've seen? And was this a success, a failure, or somewhere in between for you?
All right, let me see if I can remember the other 4. There's Shop Around the Corner.
Yes.
There's Ninotchka.
Mm-hmm.
There's Design for Living.
Mm-hmm.
And there was
Trouble in Paradise.
Trouble in Paradise. So... I question myself as to what number 1 and number 2 are. Depending on the time of day and what I'm thinking about, Ninotchka is number 1 and Shop Around the Corner is number 2, or vice versa. Design for Living is absolutely last. Absolutely last. And, there is some sort of tie between Trouble in Paradise and this banger. This movie is not... I did not enjoy this movie very much. It failed in the sense that... Or it failed to provide the usual wit, charm, and just dumb shenanigans that most of these movies did. No, I'm not saying that there were none. Zero. Listen. Zero is not a number that I'm talking about. What I'm essentially saying is less than other movies, right?
That is where I'm disagreeing with you.
And this movie, it started off strong. It had the Mel Brooksian beginning where... It kind of started off like the last movie we saw, Ninotchka, except it did it without without words. It did it without subtitles. So Ninotchka was, it started off with the same story to say, remember Paris when before there were wars or whatever, but it was all written out and kind of serene. This one, you actually had a voiceover. You had a guy saying this, and there were about 10 separate shots, each of which were kind of manic, and it all came together in kind of a wonderful, just psychedelic sort of way. It was great. But after that, it felt like it just settled into just mediocre-ness. Yes, there were actors fooling real Nazis. Yes, there were deaths and not deaths and imposters and not imposters. But the jokes, there were some jokes that resonated, but for the most part, the jokes didn't resonate as much as most of the other films did. And it was, I felt, maybe it wasn't, but I felt like it was particularly long. And at the end of the movie, I just said, well, at least I'm done with that. I didn't really enjoy this one as much as I, and you know what too? It could be that I had high expectations. Because you have to understand that this is a guy that we've watched 4 movies and is shooting about 3 out of 4. Mm. One of them was kind of not so great, but it was still positive. And we have Andrew bawling from the rooftops that this was his
closer.
His coup d'etat, his pièce de résistance, essentially, right? Andrew has saved the best for last. And I say, all right, I'm down with that. Mm-hmm. I'm Lubitsch for life.
Right.
And then it just didn't
hit.
So I was real disappointed. I would love to let it settle for a while, give it maybe a 6 months kind of cooling off period. And try and watch it again. But right, I wasn't really feeling it.
I actually found it interesting because I saw this last year for the first time. And I fell in love with it. And one of the things that I seem to have forgotten about this movie coming a year back is how much plotting there is in the first half an hour. Unlike all of his other movies where the plotting is all character-based. Where you the plot is really you paying attention to how the characters change from scene one to the end of the movie. In this movie, they have to plot you through all of the steps of the war to then get you to the point where, all right, the spy is now in Poland, the lieutenant is back in Poland, and we're going to have this actors versus spy thing go on, and the Nazis being tricked by the actors and all this stuff. And having now seen four others of his movies rather than just this one, it's... You heard me come on here every week for the last month talk about how strong he opens his movies with all these great introductory scenes. And he has this great introductory scene with them practicing the Gestapo play where we get that... We get Hal myself, which up until
no, you don't get to laugh. No,
that was the best joke ever.
No. up until I saw this movie, I honestly thought Mel Brooks invented that line.
Fair enough.
And once that's over and the war begins and everything goes on, the movie definitely dips for a good like. A good like 10 minutes where everything where they have like small moments, but the fact that they have to walk us through the ongoing war, right, to be like, this is what's happening, it kind of took away from the usual whimsy that occurs with these movies. At the same time though, I still love this goddamn movie a real lot. I definitely throw Ninotchka above this.
No.
But yeah, this, like, I said it last year and I say it again. Mm-hmm. Jack Benny is a marvel, right? He makes scenes a joy to watch. Where there's even a scene where I love the line, a man finds his way into my slippers, right? But before we even get to that line, and we have just Jack Benny walking around the room, discovering things, and the music going to Jack Benny's movements in the weirdest, silliest way that I don't think we've actually seen Lubitsch do through all of these movies we've watched so far. I still love him, right? He is that comedy goldmine where he knows he's been being silly, but you buy all of the silly so wonderfully well in every moment that he's doing it, including they call me concentration camp Earth, right? Where he just keeps going mm-hmm. through that dialogue, going like, I've run out of dialogue. Mm-hmm. I adore this.
What was good about that joke?
He literally said, I run out of that. Did you guys watch the same movie?
What I like about that show,
a man said the words, I've run out of dialogue. In a movie.
That joke was good because Earhart actually said that. Yeah. And it was great.
And he said it again. Yeah. To be like,
he just kept going. He's a, mm-hmm. He couldn't. Yeah, that's good. And he was a moron, which was nice. As I said in a Damien, there are bits and pieces, but just...
Guys.
Like this movie... Oh. Our Damien saved this movie from us. Tell us how we're wrong.
What's happening? What is happening in this podcast today?
But I don't understand. Andrew's saying he likes it. He loves this movie.
But he said that he's made a better movie. And he hasn't.
Oh, yes. He's made at least two better movies.
I'm not even... I disregarded what you said from the off. So I want to hear from you. This is his funniest movie by a country mile. The entire... Plus, the balls of this man to make this movie while the actual war was going on.
Basically,
is crazy.
History has shown, I think, three movies to be doing this. There's Casablanca, which was the most adjacent to it, which happened the same year. There's this one, and I don't know if it was this year or the year before, Chaplin did The Great Dictator.
Right.
Which everyone was like, how did you...
Right. But to mock literally everything about Hitler and the war without knowing whether or not he was going to win said war, that on the outside makes this movie a minor miracle. But then in the actual movie, just bit after bit after bit, and it is like the movie is just one continuous joke. They just tell, him asking literally everyone he comes across if they know the great actor. And everyone's
Joseph Turok.
I have no idea what you're talking about. The bits with the mustaches falling off and him pulling off. Just like the...
Did I have more than once?
Yeah.
Like, this movie, you know what this movie reminds me of? No joke, is The Big Hit. Like, there's Trace Buster moments in this movie. He convinces them that he's the actual guy by cutting off the mustache of the dead guy.
Yeah, and that was ingenious.
People come in and, when that happened, I remember the first time seeing this movie, I went, I don't know how this is possible. This movie is 1,000 years old. And I'm dying of laughter. And when I watch it again this week, I'm like, there's no way. There's no way they made this movie. Someone made this movie recently, looking back at the past. I'm like, what's a good way to mock old-timey movies and the war? And he did that during the war. And it is spectacular. The wife is amazing. she's just constantly betraying literally every man that enters the screen. And then having the airship guy, he is he's just gung-ho, I have to fight this war and you're going to be my woman. The second he's trying to convince her that she should come live on the farm and you just wash her feet. No, no. I don't know what, like, almost relieved that the war started. He went to, she's like, ah, oh, good. He's like, come back. And he's like, yeah, I'm definitely coming back for her. And she's like, no, no. Then, them, like, even them, like, painting over the sign to say Gestapo headquarters, and like all of the bits that just lined up perfectly all the way through the end. Just, I was laughing from the start of this movie all the way through the end, and there's no way, there's no, like, he didn't, like, this is the movie, like, as you said, you thought the joke, Hail Myself, right? This is the movie that triggered all of his movies. He watched this and went, I can't do this. I can't do the other ones. They're telling real stories. And what I can do is make dumb jokes about semi-serious situations and just go with that. And that is what this movie, it's so good. It is crazy that you two have come in here and be like,
yeah, I actually wonder funny, how much this is. Douglas was beside me watching this movie. I just emanating.
Like, he watched this movie like this. He's like, I thought this movie was going to be the Dark Knight of all movies. This was going to be Fury Road times 12. And he's like, I don't like this movie. I would rather watch Ninashka again.
Actually,
and,
yes,
and
please.
You are just there soaking up his bad vibes instead of just watching. Just, this movie is just shenanigans. Like, there's a story being told, but not much of one. Right? Think about how this movie ends. They walk into the place that Hitler is supposed to be as fake Hitler.
That's another thing. I remember, and I made a joke about it, and Andrew stopped and said, hold on. What? Because when that whole sequence started, I was like, ah, it's Inglourious Bastards, which it pretty much was, right?
It didn't occur to me, like, watching it last year. I'm like, holy shit, this is the scene from Inglourious Bastards. Sans the murdering. The other thing that struck me is, like, I talked about it with the first movie, The Shop Around the Corner, that I didn't want to discredit the filmmaking from just the witty dialogue and the banter. And I think this movie is more than the rest. You have sequences like that when Hitler is coming into the theater. Mm-hmm. You have sequences like when you see the war beginning in the opening of the movie. And what I think is, like, the most striking visual sequence is when they are in the theater hunting for the spy, hunting for the professor, and you have the light going everywhere. They almost film it like they forget the actors in the scene are just dumb actors and not Nazis hunting down people, because you just really see their boots and you see all of the light shining off of the boots. You see the gun at the hip, and you just hear a gunshot in the distance while they're still hunting down all of these sections. And it's kind of amazingly put together. As
speaking of being amazingly put together, we, for the past 4 weeks, have been talking about how he comes up with clever situations where he could have just have gone point to point. When they discover that he's imitating the professor, right? There was the obvious way for that to play out. But instead, they send him in the room and already have the dead man sitting in the room. And they're outside, right?
Smoking a cigar.
And laughing at the... is it enough time? Right? We should go in now, because it's probably torturing him. And then to have him open the door, and for that scene to play out how it did, he's not come anywhere close to that in any of the other movies. That took a lot of effort, and a lot of thought, and it played perfectly. And then, right at the very end, to have them come in again, and Mustache Buster, the mustache busting, I want to hear a word of it from you two. This movie is incredible. Alright, Douglas, fine, because Douglas doesn't like comedies. He's a crazy person. He's the worst of humanity. but you, Andrew.
I the comedy guru.
Jesus.
Right?
No, you the one. You the old movie guru. And you've actually seen this. Like, you saw this movie unsullied by Douglas's hatred. To have his hatred sully your second viewing. Now when you could sit and appreciate even more the shenanigans, you're just like, Douglas isn't enjoying this as much. So I'm going to sit here and
cradle this unenjoyment.
I don't want my love of this movie to amplify Douglas's hate. So I'll just sit here.
I won't show things like I'm a golden god during the movie.
Jesus. It's so much better than all of them. The jokes are funnier. It's like, it is just slapstick from start to finish.
Well, one of the weird things, as we're talking about like this whole marathon in retrospect, one of the things we've been talking about for the last month is the way how he amplifies strong women in his movies. And more importantly, he focuses on the women for the most part. This movie, it feels like, even though Carol Lombard plays a strong woman who definitely has a role, she wasn't the main focus. And it felt so much like the men were playing, like she was playing around the men as opposed to the opposite, which played true for the rest of the movies where the men were being played around the woman.
That's because, as Ghostbusters proved this year, women aren't funny, right?
Cricket sound. Cricket sound.
Well, I mean, that could be said for some of, you know.
At some point, we have to regulate the internet, right?
It's called Skynet.
We don't deserve it anymore. We've not used it the right way at all. And I think it's time we take it back. It's too much Wild West, though. I'm tired of it.
Anytime, every time you say that, every time somebody says that, I just get Cisco and Will Smith in my head.
It's because you're a terrible person. Oh, I know.
And then I hate myself for it.
No, I think, like, I was going to say, no, I'm going to think that every time. Except, no, I love Western so much. it will do nothing.
No, but it's literally those two words in sequence. I know. Wild West. And when, it just happens.
When I think Wild West, I just hear, like, the music from every Sergio Leone movie. And it's just Marconi.
So the soundtrack from Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, cool.
That's a much better soundtrack to have in your head.
It's great. You guys have come here and have seen The Bestest Man Has to Offer and have allowed yourselves to not enjoy it, which is crazy. I can't believe, like, at the end you're like, I don't think this is the one. I'm having some reservations on this one. It seemed funny. I was like, there's no jokes. There's some jokes. But not, like, you can't name me a joke from any of the other movies that comes anywhere close to any of the best jokes in these movies. Like, there's just none. Because those other movies had comedic bits, but they weren't out-and-out comedies. Right? Or maybe, like, my view of what comedies are now are coloring how, because maybe those movies were supposed to be comedies, but they didn't really feel as comedic. But this movie is 100% a comedy. Like, it's just jokes from start to finish. If someone told me that Paul Feig made this movie, like, no, if they made it now in black and white with just modern day actors, and they made this movie again, and they said, directed by Paul Feig, Melissa McCarthy is Spy Woman in whatever this movie is, I'd go, all right, cool.
And why are you trying to make Douglas hate this movie more by bringing up Melissa McCarthy?
Douglas doesn't like funny movies. Just like how he doesn't like actual comedians. He's an awful person, right? That watches comedies with his arms folded. I don't have to give him any quarter at all, right? This movie is his best movie, far and away. Like, nothing comes close. And that's, like, it is when I was looking through the thing, I'm like, because there's another movie called To Be or Not To Be that I think came out in the 80s.
Yes, it's a remake with Mel Brooks.
Right. Yeah. And
he goes, "Heil myself."
Right. I remember seeing that one, but I don't remember that one. And I was confusing that movie with this movie.
I understand that Ninotchka is fine. It's fun. I get it. Shop around the corner. There is sock suspenders, which is remarkable. But sock spenders, I think they're called. But
they're called the best garters.
Movie. No, women wear garters.
I'm men used to too.
Nope.
No. Well. No. I was not.
Yes.
It had to do with guts.
Yeah, you should probably keep that one to yourself.
Yeah.
All right, so. Mm-hmm. Damon, you and I had seen this movie before. Yes. So technically we had some exposure to the world of Lubitsch before we started on this journey.
Mm-hmm.
Douglas, you
Me
had
and Ernst
none.
Go way back.
Yeah, you way back.
I
Douglas,
feel like we just pressed the reset button on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Maybe Andrew thinks I like it more this time. We start over. Mm-hmm.
Right, if we just ignore what he said the first time, then he likes the movie.
He might give the right answer this time.
He might say the correct thing for once in his life.
I know this might be very repetitive in this tone, because I think we know the answer for the most part mm-hmm. to this question. But, Douglas, I just want to get some sort of a sense as to where you are five movies down into the world of Lubitsch, as to whether this is a scenario where if tomorrow I come to you and say, Douglas, I have another Lubitsch film for us, are you...
Yes. 10 times yes.
No, because it won't be better than this one. So what's the point?
Actually, so much so, I've been thinking about, what's that movie with the king? I want to watch that one.
The Return of the King?
So, Andrew, you and I are talking. but yes,
The King of Kong.
I would absolutely watch more Ernst Lubitsch movies.
I was going to do more King movie puns. Well, not puns, just interruptions. But I think two is enough.
That's good.
You'd probably
King Kong ain't got shit on.
All right, you'd probably just hit me with something eventually. You're Andrew. Fair enough.
Damon, where...
Not a king.
where do you fall on this? It's been five movies. Mm-hmm. Definitely To Be or Not To Be is your winner.
Yeah, and then it's Shop Around the Corner, then Ninotchka, and then the other two. I've seen those three movies multiple times, and I've seen the other two once. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to keep those
other
two.
Order by view count.
Right. I'm going to keep those other two nowhere. I don't want them. They don't have to be part of my media server. Yeah, the other three definitely have a place in my media. They live on that box for eternity, or until the drives die. I've been looking at Drobo's Douglas.
Drobo?
Yeah.
No, we're not talking about
really?
Tech.
Why?
Don't do
Why?
It.
Why?
Because they work.
But I remember not thinking they were that great.
Yeah, but
they
were. Yeah, back in the day. Douglas, you're thinking the same way I was thinking. Back in 2006, they weren't great. They're no spectacular. Ernst Lubitsch, right. He is a master. Is he making more movies?
No, he's not.
Okay.
Why? There are a lot of his movies, though. He's made 76. He's directed 76 movies.
He's made one or two.
Between the years of 1914 and
1948. What? Were there cameras in 1914?
Is yes.
It like a puppet show?
Yes, there were cameras. Yes.
So is he just painting it onto the film reel?
As long as it can get on your TV, why do you care?
I can't wait till my children look back at the 2000s and they're like, Jesus.
That Matrix.
You guys drove cars into each other for like a minute. None of you thought, maybe we shouldn't do this. Like, you just did that. You just killed thousands of each other every year. And I just went, ah, fuck it.
Is it weird that as the future keeps hitting us?
Yes.
Right?
As we barrel careen towards the future.
And there are so many things from our childhood that that people promised us technology wise.
Oh, you mean stupid writers promised us?
Yes, that still has
zero basis in physics. Zero basis.
But I took those promises sincerely. Cool.
There's no Terminators.
Right? No Terminators. There are no flying cars.
No hover boots.
No hover boots.
No hoverboards.
As all of these things continue to not exist in the real world, I become so cynical about future tech that isn't simply figured out at this point. That I'm like, I imagine a future in which things become marginally more techie, but nothing becomes magical, and my children will look on these movies from the 90s and be like, it's cute that your car didn't have that safety feature, but that's about it.
The thing is, because we're living through it, and we're the worst kind of people, like, we are invested in tech, so we only see it as increments. It's not until we look back to where we were, we're like, holy shit. If I gave you a computer that is 10 years old, you'd light it on fire. You'd basically think, you're like, no, you know what? Right? You wouldn't even be able to really use a computer that shitty, right? Now go jump 10 more years back. In our lifetime, we've seen computers go from nothing to this. Like, this is a full computer, and you have it in your hand, and it weighs nothing, and we hate these because they don't do more computing. Right?
That's well, you know what, I just realized I made the same mistake you did. So Ernst Lubitsch,
right,
five movies down, I'm definitely going to throw up Ninotchka as my favorite of this marathon,
and then 79
To Be or Not to Be follows number two, then The Shop Around the Corner, Trouble in Paradise, and Design for Living. One of the things I found enlightening watching his movies, and we've said it before, is just the way his brain constructs his comedy out of these scenes. It's a marvel. From witnessing the shopkeeper in The Shop Around the Corner attempt to goad women into thinking that this thing is a wonderful thing, to have them be like, oh yeah, you're the shopkeeper, stop talking to us. To see the way that Ninotchka finds humor in the silliest of slapstick moments, no matter how much this man tries to get her to laugh. To see To Be or Not to Be, to have the man continue to walk out at him, which is probably one of the simplest jokes which we would have seen over and over again in movies, where we just see that callback of that same reaction, even in as dumb a moment as the man is actually fully asleep, to have him respond to the term, the phrase, to be or not to be. I think one of the people who we have not mentioned as it relates to this movie, To Be or Not to Be, is a guy who played the role of Colonel Erdman, who I just downright adored.
Sorry, which one was that now?
Colonel Earhart Erdman, is that his name? The guy, the Gestapo head who who first Benny impersonates and then Benny meets as the professor. But it's when Benny meets him as the professor that you actually get to see him. And his character, who, like, you talked about how great it was to see that scene where he repeated the same affectation of, they call me Concentration Camp Earhart. But just the way that he plays off of his underling of Schultz,
yes.
Right? It reminded me a lot of stuff Mel Brooks did in movies like The Young Frankenstein. it reminded me when you see him, you talked about him placing the dead body and having them have a laugh outside with the cigar. When you see him just trying to endear himself to Maria, later in the movie, to then have Hitler appear and have him once again blame Schultz for everything. And I just...
I don't like how your subordinate keeps passing the buck to you. And then just for the rest of... Don't laugh. I really like that guy. Your face straight and pointed away from the microphone. Just watching him for the rest of the movie blame his underling. Right? Just Schultz. And it's perfect. There's no joke like that in any other movie.
You know what's going to be the best part about this, Damien?
Yeah.
In like a couple weeks or more, when I make Douglas watch the remake with Mel Brooks, and he comes back on here and just is like, yeah.
Disturbia is better than Rear Window.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've heard that before.
Yeah, but he was young and dumb. Do you remember? Like, he still thought that work was going to be fun.
He was young and innocent then? Yeah. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Remember when he was happy, he had hair and curl? It was before he put on a suit. You remember the first suit? I still have that picture. It was glorious. Just watching the hatred. Now he's like this. Now he hates people he doesn't even know. He just sits in the office. Hears them say one offhand thing. I was like, I hate all of you. I've always hated all of you people. Welcome. He would have said that no. Like, we can put both those movies. He would even watch. What was the terrible movie? Was it Disturbia? He wouldn't even watch Disturbia. Throw that garbage through the window and watch Rear Window 19 million times. We say dumb things when we're young. Right? I've made mistakes in the past.
Damien, real men don't make mistakes.
Right, I was a real man then. No, I've been working for 10 years. It doesn't get any more real.
I think we can close this one off now. That's been Lubitsch.
And coming up, Westerns. Yeah!
Which we'll come to in a few weeks when we decide on what we're going to head through. It'd be fun. Would it be better? Would it be better for us to do just a Western theme that we go through?
You can't multiple, ask me that. That's
or would it be better that we dedicate to like?
It would be better to just do multiple Westerns. Just pick all of my favorite Westerns that Douglas clearly hasn't seen and force him to watch them.
I've seen Bone Tomahawk. I've seen Bone Tomahawk.
Word. What if I told you there's
Westerns? Have you seen The Wild Bunch?
Better than Bone Tomahawk.
I've seen Bone Tomahawk. Right.
Have you seen True Grit?
Yes.
Okay, I've seen True Grit. So you've seen two. You've seen Django.
Yes.
Right. Have you seen The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly?
I haven't seen Django.
Technically, yes.
Oh, you played Red Dead Redemption.
No, I have actually watched that movie. It was a long time ago.
Right. But when you were a child. You played Red Dead, so you've basically seen every Western. Because that's literally what they did.
Exactly.
Just crammed Westerns into that game. Which is why I love that game more than anything else. Except Uncharted 4. Because Uncharted 4 is still the perfect.
I watched Back to the Future 3.
Have you played
that
count?
No. Oh, Christmas.
Back to the Future 3? That counts?
No.
Yes, it does.
It's a bad movie.
All right, guys. We're going to shut it off here.
Yes. Ernst Lubitsch.
Yes, Lubitsch. Yeah, we're all Lubitsch. We're all super pro Lubitsch.
Yeah. The problem is he has directed 19,000 movies, and there's no.
You think that's a problem?
Yeah, I'm not watching 76 of his movies. That is a promise.
Oh, and by the way, Douglas, you're asking what the movie is with the king, with that joke that I've told you about.
Yeah.
It's The Merry Widow from 1934.
It sounds so old. The Merry Widow.
Dun, dun, dun. You can see like what movie is it where there is a court and you can see in my mind's eye when I hear that name, I think of, you know, the music that they play in The Holy Grail. Brave Sir Robin. Yeah. Like songs like that.
IMDb does have musical beside it. I'm just saying. I can't promise it. Also, he also
deliberately made bad movies.
The bomber was leaving in space for Berlin with a cargo of gifts from the boys. There was one for old Hitler, packed full of H-E, and a specially big one for old Herman G. So here's to the bombs, big and small. We'll send them a cheer as they fall. We'll never be seated till Hitler's defeated.